A Jewish Journal article. Night of Spring Cleaning. When God in Egypt killed all of the firstborn sons, it was the last of plagues, the tenth. The panic that ensued was quite the worst the land had ever seen, and proved God's strength, for after all the firstborn had been killed, respect of the Egyptian gods was earned when blood of firstborn sons was spilled. They tripped, and all of them were overturned, fulfilling God's prediction to be vindictated against gods that came to fail as they would fail the villains in Berlin, against whom allies later would prevail. Before God realized that Moses never had circumcised his son, he very nearly killed him, till his wife prepared to sever the foreskin. God regarded most severely his emissary's very strange delay, and therefore gave a serious reprimand when he was in a lodging on the way, avoiding what he could not understand. A God who had appeared to him as Fireman told him, "I am what I am," without explaining why he strangely wished to hire a man who in this being had grave doubt. God told him, "When you go to Pharaoh, say, 'My firstborn son is Israel.' If you do not let him leave the land where you have swayed, kill your own as punishment for you." No other warning later would be given before God killed Egyptian firstborn sons in his surprise attack, still unforgiven by pacifists and Protestants and nuns, and bleeding hearts who are constantly demanding a higher standard from the God of Jews than from competitors who are less outstanding. He totally ignored the liberal views applied by them to Jews with a far higher standard than the one that they apply to other nations, preaching to the choir against the people who their Christ deny. The reason why the Pharaoh was not warned, is he'd told Moses, following the plague of darkness, words that proved how much he scorned the Lord, "Do not return." He was not vague, explicit with his rude refusal to meet once more with Moses. With this warning, the Pharaoh engineered his own recusal, refusing an encounter in the morning before the plague. He would not reconsider his attitude to threats of any terror, although such warnings are today de rigueur before insurgents strike. It is an error to think that Moses should be blamed. How could he warn the Pharaoh who had said, "Don't ever come back"? Blame the Pharaoh, for he should have realized that Moses was more clever than his magicians, trusted royal advisors, and God more powerful than Ra and Aton. Too autocratic, he would fall like Kaisers, unwarned, as was the U.S. when Manhattan was by Islamic fundamentalists attacked when planes turned into firebombs, though names were on the FBI's checklists. And hate was daily spewed out by imams. There was no warning. People at the wheel asleep when some 3,000 people died because their leaders thought the threat not real, and from reality preferred to hide. We truly aren't exaggerating, are we? Before four planes were hijacked, an arrest was made of the Al-Qaeda man, Moussaoui, who says he would, if he'd been asked, confess that there were plans for him to crash a plane into the White House, but the FBI who questioned him took no steps to obtain the data that then stared them in the eye. At midnight, God sent out his fell destroyer called Mashahit, not battleship its meaning but the force God uses as employer, while Israelites were occupied spring cleaning their houses from which leaven was removed, and eating lamb with flat unleavened bread and bitter herbs, while sprinkling blood that proved that Hebrews lived indoors. There were no dead among the Israelites since God passed over each one of them, but for Egyptians all firstborn died at midnight, for Jehovah was far more deadly than a cannonball, and his destructive weapons more selective than those we use today in all our wars. His guidance system never is defective, receiving from reporters great applause. Only firstborn sons then died, all others survived catastrophe, for God had mastered the best technique for finding first of brothers, this one legitimate, this one a bastard. It happened in some houses one son died, though not the firstborn of his mother's spouse. The secret that his mother used to hide, she'd cheated on the master of the house, and that son whom her husband had believed to be his firstborn was a bastard who had illegitimately been conceived. The fact that he survived a major clue. In other houses, people known as firstborn sons survived because a bastard brother preceded them. They only learned the worst when they survived because there was another with bastard precedence who died elsewhere, the firstborn by the Lord's destroyer found. Legitimacy never was a care that bothered God's infallible bloodhound. Because the Lord that night the Hebrews guarded, they gave the night the name of guarding night, with bloody doorposts Hebrews all were carded. When posts weren't bloody, people had a fright, for no firstborn Egyptian on the stroke of midnight, Passover, by God was spared. The moment God's destroyer saw the smoke where lambs were roasting in the blood, God cared, and all the Hebrews therefore celebrated the first of all the festivals, the date from sight of new moon always calculated. Not a moment earlier or late. Among Egyptians dying on that night were Pharaoh's son and men who lived in chains, in dungeons captive. God would even smiteth firstborn cattle, some with healthy brains and others with mad cow disease they caught. Fifth plague. When some cows died and some survived. Survivors' brains with prions all were fraught. A sickness that has recently revived, which is not pleasant for a carnivore, though many vegetarians may be pleased that meat that they instinctually abhor is sometimes microscopically diseased. Many Jews consider eating meat a mere concession God provided Noah, for Adam never was allowed to eat such meat. Of cereals he was a grower. True, Abel was a husbandman, but Cain, who killed his brother in a fit of pique, produced fine vegetables and lots of grain. The act of murder surely his critique of Abel's lack of pity for the beast she shared with God to whom he sacrificed. Never would he join him in his feasts, nor was he by his barbecues enticed. It's possible that we should think of Cain as founder of societies like PETA, the sort of man who also would complain when God gave skins to Adam, though no eater of meat, as we have pointed out above. Descriptions of the way God liked to savour the smell of sacrifices that he used to love cannot obtain from ethicists much great favor. From Egypt there arose a mighty groan because in every house some dead were lying. Throughout the land of Egypt men would moan and say, "The time has come to stop the dying." Then Pharaoh called for Moses and for Aaron, and said, "It's time for you to leave and serve your God." Such magnanimity was foreign to Pharaoh, but he'd clearly lost his nerve. He won it back again quite soon, indeed, and tried recapturing his Hebrew slaves, which proves that truly he paid far less heed to God than to his people making waves. An autocrat, the man would never listen to all his people's foolish, selfish wishes, but this was Passover, the month was Nisan, the time of year when Hebrews change their dishes, and Pharaoh also changed his way of thinking. At least for 3 days till his slaves had fled, a period when his ego started shrinking. Before his id came back and ruled his head. So desperate was he, without confessing his guilt, he let the Hebrews take their flocks and herds, then asked if he could have a blessing from Moses, Aaron. There were further shocks when all of the Egyptian people gave the Israelites their silver and their golden garments, asking if their slaves forgave the way they'd held them in a stranglehold. The gifts they gave were those that were foretold to Moses when God met him at the bush, and very soon caused Egypt to make bold pursuit of them, regretting shove and push. A similar prediction of these gifts occurred when God told Abraham that his descendants would leave the land to which they had transferred with wealth, before they gained their independence. Predictably, the anti-Semites claimed that Israelites ripped off Egyptians when they took their gold and silver. What a shame if they didn't also take their diamonds then. Egyptians owed them big time for the toil the Israelites in slavery had performed. It was their wages that they took as spoil. As anti-Semites ought to be informed. Departing Hebrews took with them their dough before it leavened, bound up in the sacks they carried on their shoulders, most gung-ho to move ahead, with no time to relax. They had to hurry when they packed their bags which they like rucksacks carried on their shoulders, clad very lightly, wearing shmats, rags, since they'd been inti-fatered by the boulders Egyptians used to throw at them because they blamed them for the plagues that made them suffer while Israelites were suffering no loss. In Goshen, their de facto state and buffer. 600,000 Israelites were there, Egyptians too, a mixed-up multitude who for the Hebrew laws did not much carry as much as for their women's pulchritude. They joined the Israelites just as much latter the Moabites would join them in Judea, Arab, mixture, linking them, each traitor. Resisting progress like Queen Boudicca. They traveled fast and there were no delays, and so the dough had little time to rise, and all of them were forced for 7 days to eat unleavened bread. A great surprise for people who were used to adding yeast to dough to make it rise up and be puffy. Unleavened bread in any humble feast makes people feel less pompous and less stuffy, and ever since, when Jews commemorate the Exodus escaping from the Putzishut even tried to stop them procreate. They eat unleavened bread which they call matzos. 430 years the Israelites were slaves in Egypt, now they all were free. They crossed the Reed Sea and then set their sights in Canaan where God promised they would be. But first he had for them a different mission. To build a tabernacle as his slaves, his chosen people by his definition, who give him the obedience that he craves, for they exchanged their absolute obedience to Pharaoh for the one that God demanded. The trade was just a matter of expedience, the deal the best one Moses, single-handed, obtained from God who got himself a bargain, emancipated slaves whom he'd compelled to follow laws expressed in Jewish jargon. In words they could not read or write or spell. On the night of guarding history begins for Israel, tale without an end, which is indeed the greatest mystery that Passover helps people comprehend, for on it, it is possible to ask at least 4 questions which quite possibly have got no answer, though it is our task to search for ones so we all may live free. Gershon Hepner is a poet who has written over 25,000 poems on subjects ranging from music to literature, politics to Torah. He grew up in England and moved to Los Angeles in 1976. Using his varied interests and experiences, he has authored dozens of papers in medical and academic journals, and authored Legal Friction, Law, Narrative, and Identity Politics in Biblical Israel. He can be reached at email protected.